Well, I'd like to welcome Lou Zell to the show. Lou, welcome.
Hello, Ben. Thank you for having me.
Sure. So today we wanted to talk to you a little bit about AI and applications and kind of how you can use them, how you can integrate them, how you can monetize them. But before we jump into that, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your background. And I often ask people to share their developer story, which is just kind of like a quick overview of kind of how you got into development, maybe how you got into AI development, and you know, how you ended up where you are today.
So I'm the founder of AIproxy.com. We make it really easy to add AI into Apple platform apps. I've been programming for quite a while. I'm going to give the very short version, which is I used to be a hardware engineer. So I did a bunch of low-level C and then jumped way to back-end development, doing Rails backends for 10 years. And then jumped on iOS and have been kind of switching back and forth between iOS and backend for the remainder of my career. And that brought my co-founder and I to working on AI apps. We thought AI apps would be big, the next big phase of Gold Rush. And we started working on bootstrap products, actually, to help ourselves ship AI apps more quickly and to market to customers. And we quickly ran into this problem where, okay, you know, we're trying to build very quickly without a backend. And we get to the point in development where we're about to launch this product. And we realize that we somehow need to protect our API keys. And this is a very common developer story for people that are integrating APIs into their apps. And we looked around and didn't find anything that was really great for a solution. Said, you know, we've got backend skills and a mix of infra and iOS skills, so we could be the people that do this right. And we built a proxy, and that became AIproxy.com.
It does seem very common, right? That like some of the best products end up just being something that you go to try and find and say, oh, this doesn't exist. What if we built it for ourselves? You build something that works, and then you're like, wait, maybe other people could use this too, right? It's surprising how often that happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great way to build products because you yourself feel the pain, so you know what you want built, and you can build to that pain.
Yeah, you're a perfect customer proxy because you are the customer, at least the first one.
Yep, that's right.
So maybe talk a bit more about AI proxy, kind of how it works and how a developer uses it to integrate AI into their own app.
Sure, yeah. We started as mostly like a security product, right? Where in that development journey, you get to the point that you're trying to protect a key. And we really use a bunch of technologies that Apple lets us employ to thread the needle on building an AI app that doesn't require user authentication, because end users don't want to like sign in with something, right? Developers
right.
See that as too much friction. We made that a requirement, and Apple gives us this like set of tools that lets us say, okay, we're not going to make people sign in, but we still want good abuse protection. And that was the starting point that we started from. And so we did something called public key pinning, which makes it really hard to sniff traffic. And we use device check, which is an Apple technology that validates that requests that come to your backend are originated from legit Apple hardware. We layered these solutions into something that we packaged up really tightly that the end developer doesn't have to deal with at all. They just take our Swift SDK, they drop it into their iOS app. It's as if they're programming just native Swift, no backend, but transparently we are sending requests out to our proxy, employing these abuse protection patterns. And if the abuse protection comes up negative, meaning, you know, we don't see any risk threat, then we fulfill the request out to the back end.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely abstracts a lot of the complexity away, right? It lets you focus as an app developer on just integrating an AI feature into your app and not having to worry about sort of the ecosystem of what's available there and all of the, I'm sure, platform specific things you'd have to be aware of if you were going to use any one of these tools. You can, like you said, you can just act like it's just a regular Swift API, maybe even one that Apple built, right?
Yeah, and we try to provide good developer ergonomics around it. You're not making like a million calls to us, a million like complicated calls. We give you copy paste snippets where you're like, I want to integrate OpenAI chat into my product. And we give you this like snippet that you grab from our README and drop into your app. And transparently, everything's going out to OpenAI and getting you that functionality that you want. And so it really,
nice.
It started as a security product, but it's really morphed into just, this is the fastest way to get AI into your iOS app. And like that's really what our marketing should start reflecting rather than just being like, oh, we can protect your API key.
Sure. So as we kind of get into maybe some of the, what are the AIs that are available and what are the most popular ones? I did have a question for you about kind of maybe the slightly changing landscape, although probably not as much as people might think, of Apple Intelligence being included in sort of the mix or in the conversation.
Yeah.
Is that something that you guys have looked at as far as, I mean, I know there isn't a ton available yet with it, but is it something you've looked at as far as trying to integrate maybe that into the same SDK so that you can just get to everything from one place?
I think on device in general will be really interesting. You know, I played with some of the Apple Intelligence functionality, it's good. Like the infill stuff is really nice, but I think there will always be kind of cutting edge stuff that's out at the edge that's only provided through API providers. However, I think that there could be a lot of compelling apps that kind of mix the two, where they take like Apple's vision frameworks, for example, and they marry it up with some of the more like reasoning models or some of the cutting edge stuff that's out that you can only get from API providers. But yeah, we have like one of our internal apps actually is only local. We also ship apps ourselves, and one of them just uses AI functionality that's local, and you can get great results with that. And I think, you know, it's yet to be seen how compelling Apple Intelligence will be. Actually, is I think I'll answer that.
Yeah, we haven't really seen the most powerful parts yet, right? So we don't, it's hard to speculate. Okay, so let's jump into kind of understanding a bit about the AI landscape, right? What's available? What's popular? What are you guys seeing as sort of an aggregator, right, of this functionality for mobile devs? You guys get kind of a unique perspective, an interesting seat to look at what's available and what people are using and what they're not using. So if we were to go through kind of the, maybe your top noticed popular APIs, I would imagine that OpenAI is probably at the top of that list, or at least near the top of that list.
It's for sure at the top by like quite some margin. Actually, we have something like 1,000 developers so far on AI Proxy, and not all of them create projects, but right now we have about 360 open AI projects, and the next closest is Replicate, which is really interesting. It's not another big AI company, it's still relatively big, but it's a great startup. They're coming in second above Gemini and Anthropic. It's really quite interesting that there's this big gap, and then Replicate is number two.
Yeah, and that number two is not one of the ones you mentioned, right? Like Gemini, the ones that have had billions and billions of dollars from giant companies invested money into them, and yet it's not them.
Yeah, they've got a great offering though. I really like Replicate. They host models. They have like a broad offering of what the models can do, and so it kind of makes sense to me. Like app developers are kind of, especially the ones that find us, because they're really, you know, we don't market a lot. We don't market much at all. So the ones that find us are like pretty cutting edge. You know, they're paying attention to what's being released, and Replicate kind of has this like constant drumbeat of these new models that they're hosting that you can experiment with and see if you can package something that they've created up and productize it. And so it does kind of make sense to me. But yeah, OpenAI is definitely in the front by a good margin.
That makes sense for the audience, right? Like you're describing, it sounds like a very developer friendly offering, or at least the way that developers like think about this stuff anyway, right? So if you kind of are on the same wavelength, it sounds like that would be something that developers would naturally gravitate towards. So it makes sense. Cool. So OpenAI is obviously on the top. We got Replicate next. Who else have you been seeing as far less popular, but who else have you been seeing getting some usage?
DeepSeek is definitely, you know, on the rise. That landed with a big just explosion of interest. Smaller, maybe lesser known companies like OpenRouter. I don't know how familiar the audience will be with companies like that, but OpenRouter is also a startup, and they're pretty great in that you can, specifically related to DeepSeek, they do a good job with this. They try to pick the backend provider, like the inference provider, that has the best uptime to fulfill requests. So as an end developer, you drop in AI proxy support for OpenRouter, requests will go, they'll bounce through us to OpenRouter, and then OpenRouter will have it fulfill at whatever provider is serving with the best uptime right now. And so we're seeing DeepSeek customers, you know, customers that want to integrate DeepSeek into their AI apps, they'll use us with OpenRouter, which is a nice combination. So they're lesser known. You know, one thing I wanted to talk about was Gemini, because Gemini's, their offerings are very good, but we see almost no interest in it, which is kind of crazy, because you know, you think you have this like huge trillion dollar company that's behind this, and you'd think they'd have this incredible marketing arm, and they do to some extent, but it's just the Gemini API is actually really powerful and really good, especially for multimodal stuff, and we don't see any interest in it for for our customers anyway, for whatever reason.
Yeah, so wild. It's for anybody who doesn't know, Gemini is powered by Google. So Google's behind Gemini. It's as you said, Lou, right? It's just a gargantuan company with seemingly endless resources. It's interesting that they are not. I wonder specifically for iOS devs if it's like a Google allergy, right? Just like we don't like Google in general, that they don't, they're just avoiding it. If the offering is great, and you're trying to build an AI app, why not at least research it? But maybe it's just sort of a general standoffishness that iOS devs have for Google products.
One thing I think that they're struggling at is their documentation is really tricky to navigate. You know, Google has like a bazillion different services and you're trying to like find the right one just to get an API key and make some requests. But we try to make it really easy. You know, we've done the groundwork of reversing their official clients and building a Swift client for them. And you can go to our README or our documentation site on Gemini and like copy paste some of these multimodal experiences, like a vision API that can read and understand video or still images, or speak like audio that you can get speaker labels in the transcript from. It's powerful stuff and it works really well. It's just we're not seeing interest in it.
It's just not popular for whatever reason. Is it an issue of price? Like,
No, it's cheap.
Okay, so that's not it.
Yeah. Then,
maybe it's just iOS devs just don't consider Google because, you know, Google equals bad. I don't know. Well, for the audience out there, if you're gonna use AI proxy or if you're gonna use AI tools in general, don't sleep on Gemini, right? Take a look at it. It's got some good stuff. So as far as it sounds like really you're covering the gamut of what's available there, and you've got a lot of different tools sort of at your fingertips to then provide to developers through the SDK. What are some things that you've seen as far as functionality with some of these things that people aren't using for whatever reason? And we talked about in one case, an entire API people aren't really using, but as far as the functionality available, what are things that people just maybe haven't caught on to yet?
I think the big one right now is all of the video stuff that's happening. I don't know if you follow this space at all, but the video advancements on just consistency and cohesion they're really moving in an incredible direction. And we don't see many iOS folks taking advantage of that yet. I think part of the challenge is like the user pattern of waiting, you know, a certain amount of time. If you're on your computer and you're waiting for something to generate and you're doing like work for an agency, like you're building creatives for an agency, it's no big deal to wait a few minutes for result to come in. If you're on your phone, I don't think people have really like cracked yet what the user pattern is for waiting a few minutes for this like AI to do its work and come up with something that's really impressive, but you know, it's not instantaneous.
Yeah, it's interesting that the attention spans are so different, right? It's effectively the same computing environment. I mean, at this point, right, mobile phones are pretty much just as powerful as desktop computers, but the tolerance for that kind of wait, I think, is very different depending on the platform.
Yeah, I think that one, you know, that's people will crack it. Like there will be work that happens on your app, I mean, on your phone. It's just more, I think they're seeing more adoption web and possibly desktop too right now. But so there's that one. And then like DeepSeek obviously made this like huge impact and people have been interested in incorporating that, specifically R1, the reasoning model. I don't know if we've seen the results from a user experience standpoint, someone really capitalizing on the full power that these things can offer. So I think it's still early on that one.
And explain really quick kind of the idea behind the reasoning model. Like what's different about that compared to what we've seen before?
Sure. Yeah. With a traditional approach to LLMs, the LLM is just, it's predicting the next token. It's predicting the next word. So you enter your prompt. Many of these providers, you can see the stream emitting as the next token predictions are occurring. With reasoning, it takes a bit longer, but what the model is trying to do is it's not just generating the next token, it's generating these outputs and then it's deliberating on the output. And then it's trying to refine that output before it sends it back to the end user. So you can get behavior that makes the model much more intelligent because it's taking longer, it's throwing more compute at it, and it's like it kind of works in tandem with the traditional just next token generation. For an end user, you can have it do more like deep thinking about your problem before it spits something out.
Okay. It really sounds like it's the next generation of what LLMs, you know, where they started from. Now we went from just sort of pure predicting the next word, which surprisingly for human language tends to be kind of alarmingly good at giving us valuable information or valid answers, but being able to think maybe more like how a human would think about a complex question, breaking it down into pieces and trying to consider them before just answering, right, regurgitating an answer, sounds definitely like the next sort of step. I think I want to say I've heard that OpenAI is working on a tool that's similar to that and is going to be releasing something like that soon as well.
Yeah, O1 is a reasoning model already. And then O3 Mini High, or the O3 series is released, but not the O3, not like the main O3 model right now. But yeah, for coding, like O3 High, I think it's called, it's like something in the middle of that LLM just kind of streaming outputs at you and the O1, which like thinks for a while before getting you a response. This one's relatively snappy. It does try to aim for like consistency in the code output that it gives you. So instead of like, you know, maybe LLM's going to hallucinate a lot on some code generation that you're asking it to do, O3 should give you some more consistency.
I did want to ask you about DeepSeek a little bit before we move on. So I have heard that it is, that politically it's a kind of a different story from maybe the technology. And I think I even saw a news report recently that South Korea, I think it was planning on banning the use of DeepSeek. Is that something that you've seen in general, or how would you respond to perhaps from a political perspective, countries deciding to make these things unavailable in their market?
That's really interesting. So when DeepSeek first came out, you know, there was a lot of hemming and hawing about it. And, you know, you could argue rightfully so. DeepSeek did something incredible that no one can deny. They open source the weights of the model. This is something that they just straight up released the weights. So if you are concerned about your data going to an inference provider in China, which you may very likely be, you can find US providers or EU providers or wherever you want that have taken their model weights and run inference themselves within geographies that you're comfortable with. First off, I just think what DeepSeek did was amazing by opening up the weights, because we haven't seen much of that. And then the question is, do you trust company DeepSeek to safeguard your data and not sell it to entities that you don't want it sold to? And for that, you can work around it entirely by using a US provider. You do have to pay more for it, right? The inference is more expensive than running inference against DeepSeek. DeepSeek's pricing is like incredibly competitive. It's cheap, very cheap. And some of the US providers are more, but you get the data privacy that you want with it.
In theory, right? I mean, I guess at the end of the day, every company is either going to be a good or a bad steward of your information. And just because of where they're located doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be good or bad at it, but fair point. Talked a little about kind of what's available and then also what people are maybe not working on. I've noticed that you talked a little bit about Gemini and the vision model. Is that something that you think could be uniquely utilized in an iOS app, maybe in a way that perhaps other tools on other platforms would be less desirable or less available even? Right, we're talking about like the desktop web or something. It's just, you're not going to have access to things like that you would need to be able to make a compelling vision-based tool.
Right, yeah. All the hardware integrated in a seamless way makes that multimodal stuff. And when I say multimodal, I just mean audio, video, feeding into these inference providers. Case of Gemini, I think what it opens up really is things that used to be really hard that you would need like teams of engineers to do well, you can now do with an API call, which is amazing, right? As an indie developer, and I know Adapti is into this too, where, you know, you want to empower your indies to build beyond their usual scope. And so I think something like Gemini is great, any of these inference providers really, but yeah, the multimodal stuff for Gemini is really cool because they can build like vision apps in a seamless way with the iOS frameworks, you know, tapping into the camera and doing real-time overlays or whatever you want. Yeah, I think there are products that would previously be very hard that are now much more easy to develop. Tracking exactly what that is an art for sure. Like we're trying to do it ourselves too. Like Todd, my co-founder, you know, we're building apps as well. That's part of the reason we built AI Proxy, is because we just want to experiment quickly, try to find what these new patterns are going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole new world, I think, as far as functionality, right? Like you said, it's a lot easier to build things today that were either very difficult or impossible, straight up impossible to build even just a few years ago. It goes back to the sort of age old problem of, like you said, right, finding product market fit, finding a product that then has a market that people will actually pay for. There's lots of tools that could be built, but what are the ones that are going to actually sort of resonate in the market? If we were to kind of maybe go up the hierarchy, right, of like, let's say you're really interested interested in this, but you've not built an AI integrated app before. I'll count myself among that. I'm an iOS developer and I've never built complex AI app. I did build an app that used a machine learning model and a computer vision setup to do something, but it was not the same kind of, I would not qualify the same kind of AI as what we're talking about here. If you were to kind of walk me through like the development hierarchy of like super easy to really advanced, which might help our audience if they want to get into this, start somewhere simple and then build up, maybe even use AI proxy to help them get there. What would be maybe like the easiest thing to do? And then kind of what's the next thing after that?
The easiest thing to do is take the models exactly as they're built. Don't do any tuning on them, nothing fancy. Just take them as they're built and use the inference providers to fulfill chat completions. And you can get very far with this, actually, especially as the providers are expanding the context window, which means the amount of information that you can send up in an API request. That's absolutely the easiest. Depending on your business, you can start to use different techniques that do require some more engineering and more infrastructure. Difficult but still approachable technique is called RAG. And that's where you have this corpus of your own, say, company data or reports of some sort that you're particularly interested in. You store those in what's called a vector database. And then as your prompt from your user comes in, you get an encoding of that prompt and you find the related relevant information from that vector database and then feed all of that into an LLM. That would be like certainly a step above, maybe even call it like two steps above just using an API and getting results. I think maybe one last thing to cover would just be the like actually changing the weights of the model. And you would do this with a fine tuning process. Maybe I should say that sometimes even doing that is not that complicated because the providers will give you tooling to do it in a great way. For example, Replicate, for one of their image generation models, they give you a way to train your own model on like pictures that you've taken yourself. And they do all this through an API. So actually, in that case, it's even just like one step above just integrating an API request is you're now like packaging up a set of images, for example, of like your pets, let's say. Like you say, package up a set of images of your pets, you send it off to this image generation LoRA training job, you get a model that's trained on your custom images. So that's like adjusted the weights of the model so that when you run inference on it, the model itself has changed and it gives you back something that's very specialized to your use case.
Right, right. I guess that is maybe the difference with the modern sort of usage of machine learning and AI compared to what I would consider even just a few years ago, which is you wanted to do machine learning. You wanted to basically have a model that could predict things for you. You had to kind of start from scratch in many cases and build it yourself, right? Train it yourself. And what you're saying is that now we actually have the ability to take a model that's already been, in theory, well-tuned to a use case, right? And we can just simply kind of augment or add our own context to it, right? Like in this case, let's just say a collection of images, right? And you can tune it so that it will be better at your use case than maybe it would otherwise generally be, but you don't have to necessarily start from scratch. Is that something that you've noticed people doing, or is that something are we now at a high enough level that it's not yet kind of caught on?
No, it's caught on. And your description of that was spot on. Let me just say that was great. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. People are not starting from scratch anymore. You've had billions of dollars poured into training these core models. As a startup, you're just not going to do that. Like, you're not going to start from scratch anymore. You're going to start from a starting point that's another provider has done the groundwork on. So yeah, people aren't even like considering that. I worked at Lyft not too long ago, and we were training up models from scratch. And I think there are domains where you would still, I think there are still domains where you would do that in the enterprise for sure. But if you were building, it'd be like specialized domains and you'd be doing specialized training. If you were doing anything LLM related, you would want to start with something that was pre-trained for sure.
Right. So would you say in like if we just consider like perhaps the consumer space and maybe like small to medium sized business space, so accepting maybe a really large enterprise organization that perhaps is in a very specific vertical, like you said, and maybe then has very specific needs and is then going to say, okay, well, none of these things apply to me. I'm going to build my own thing because my data is very, very specific. Accepting them, would you say that from your experience, your observation, that you think we've maybe hit like a ground floor with AI and machine learning as far as models, that we probably have a model for most use cases already trained, and it's just a matter of then if you come in fresh, it's a matter matter of you finding that model and augmenting it perhaps, but not necessarily building from scratch? Or do you think there's still large swaths of human understanding, right, that we need models for?
That's interesting. I don't know.
I'm just asking your opinion. I'm not like, you know, I don't expect an authoritative answer. I'm just curious about your opinion.
Well, two things come to mind. One is there will always be, I think, niche topics that require training. Even if you don't have a huge data set, you can create a model that's with more classical technique. I should say that, like, I'm not an expert in machine learning core development. Some of the things that I'm saying, they're from my experience at Lyft, just from my experience being close to it with AI Proxy. I don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure. My gut says that we aren't at this ground floor where we've got all these weights that we can use and everything that we start should be at this level of abstraction. But I don't have like a cogent argument about why.
That's totally fair. My guess would be, knowing, you know, being even less close to it as you are, my guess would be that probably maybe the answer is like, we have a decent ground floor for a large swath or a large section of things that maybe app developers would be interested in building for, but not, you know, like you said, it's not complete, right? It's not the case that every single use case you're going to run into is going to say, oh, well, here, start from here. Don't start from scratch. But what I was kind of getting at was I was wondering if the idea that like somebody from our audience or just use me as a proxy or an analogy, right? Like me as an app developer wanting to build, let's say, a consumer facing app for the app store, for the general consumer that does something with AI, right? Like my guess would be that if there's not something I can tune, it probably would be pretty minor exception compared to the things that are available for tuning.
Yeah, 100%. And I think even if you were to build something custom, I think you would stack it on top of one of the existing providers. Like it wouldn't be just your thing in an island. It would be one of the big main providers and then like your niche model on top of it stacked.
Right. So if we were to kind of boil it down to like advice, right, for the audience on if you want to get into this, we talked about the ways that you can do that. You can start with just maybe wrapping a chat completion, right? Something really simple. You're not doing really anything special. You're just interacting with the AI through your app up to, you know, using a RAG or integrating this stuff more deeply into some other app functions that you're doing. The advice, I guess, would be don't start from scratch, right? Like try and see if you can find a way to leverage what's already there.
If you're an app developer, absolutely. And also look at Apple's frameworks as well. Like Apple gives you a lot of functionality out of the box too. And so, you know, it's just going to give you so much more leverage than being stuck down in the weeds doing this model building yourself.
So then I did want to kind of touch a bit on, so like the idea of an AI tool being an agent for you actually completing tasks, which is something that, you know, we talked about Apple Intelligence. And one of the big things that isn't yet available that is supposedly coming very soon is the idea that the system, the iOS, the operating system itself, will be able to even perform work for you. You'll be able to tell it not just write me a story, that's one thing, but actually go do XYZ tasks and then come back and tell me what happened, right? So is that something that the next big thing? I mean, I've seen agentic AI tools being advertised all over the place for things like even like developer stuff where it's like, I'll build an app for you, right? Just tell me what you want and I'll do it for you. So what have you seen with that? And are people trying to do stuff like that with mobile apps? And where do you see that going?
You know, I haven't seen many people developing as far as my customers go, for iOS doing that. And I think part of the problem is all the sandboxing that Apple does. You know, it's like a very kind of tightly bound unit in a sandbox when you're building an app. And I think a lot of the agentic proposals that people are talking about building, they like reach out and they touch other parts of the system and they do things on your behalf. Maybe on Apple's platform, you can use the accessibility APIs to do some of that. And that might get you better results on macOS. I'm not seeing on iOS. And actually there's a hackathon at the end of this month, Cloudflare and OpenAI are putting on, and I'm going to that. And it's on agents. And my purpose at that hackathon is to see what other people are doing. If folks are building in the Apple ecosystem and take it on myself too, to see what I can do within the Apple ecosystem.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the case that it does. When they announced all that stuff at WWDC last year, and they said, "Oh, we'll be able to do all of these things for you in the system," it's like, "Well, yeah, of course you will, because you have privileged access to everything in the operating system. You can get to any data you want, but you're not necessarily going to expose it to others." So I'm very interested to see what those APIs look like for Apple Intelligence once we get them. Like, what can third party devs do with them? Because up until this point, they've been very clear about, you don't get access to data that doesn't belong to you if you're an app, if you're an app developer. And in general, as a user, I agree with that. I don't want apps just reaching into every other part of my phone and grabbing whatever data they want. That's, as a consumer, that's not what I would want. But it does certainly limit the ability of, like in this case, of things to be made that are truly useful, right? It might end up being that maybe you can make one, but it's more of kind of a toy rather than something that's really useful because of that limited access.
Yeah, it will be interesting. I'm totally with you. It'll be interesting to see what tools they give us to build agents. Yeah, agents for the phone. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk a little about, kind of wrap up here with how we've talked about, you know, what's available and what you might build, how you might get into it. You know, an aspiring AI Apple ecosystem developer who's listening to the show wants to get into this and build something. How can they use AI Proxy in particular to kind of get started? What would be your advice basically to get started if they wanted to go and sign up and start using your tools?
Yeah, I would say just start playing around, really. We have hundreds of snippets in our README and on our documentation site that are pretty well labeled, like how to do X with OpenAI, how to do Y with Gemini. And so you can grab those and just start playing with it. And the client library is called AI Proxy Swift. That is our, like, it's our unified library that gives all this AI functionality both through AI Proxy. So you can use it through us, but you could also use it to go directly to the provider. So even if you're just in a prototyping phase and you're not thinking about shipping something to the app store where you could potentially expose your key, if you're just prototyping, you can just go straight to the provider, use your secret key. It's on your computer, so you're not exposing yourself to a big AI bill. But when you do go to ship to production, you don't want your key in there, because it'll get, people don't realize this actually. It's very trivial to man in the middle an iOS app. An attacker can take your phone, they set up man-in-the-middle proxy on their Mac, and they can have all the traffic, all the HTTPS traffic going through that man-in-the-middle proxy and exposed in plain text to the attacker. And part of that will be your secret key stuffed in an authorization header that they can pull out, and then they can run their own business on your dime.
Right. And it's not just unauthorized access to the API. It's they're then running up a gigantic bill that you then have to pay for, right?
So exactly. Yeah. Yes. And so for the prototyping stage, using your own key is totally fine. So I would grab AI Proxy Swift, just start playing around with the sample snippets that are in there. Yeah, just have fun with it.
So then let's say we've done that, right? Let's say we've got an idea. We've even used these tools to build an application and we want to get it out into the world. Something that maybe people are thinking about that are keeping them from wanting to get into this are they've heard that it can be very expensive to interact with these models and actually get results kind of at scale, right? If we're talking about a couple of users, it's no big deal. But if we're talking about thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of users, your app is very successful, which is great, but the downside is you could incur massive costs. And so what have you guys seen as far as how to kind of, you know, that's definitely the lane that Adaptee is in, is trying to help developers build businesses that are sustainable, right? And so pricing and structure, you know, monetization of how they turn their idea into something that will actually not only sustain them, but make them money and make them successful. What have you guys seen with the apps that you've been working with and how people have gone about trying to, you know, make up the cost basically of running this stuff?
Yeah, for us, one of our tools that we give people is per user and per IP rate limits. And so what our customers are doing right now is they're crafting their rate limits. Sometimes they use per day, but many times they use it on a per month basis. They craft their rate limits on a per month basis so that they can enforce that their provider costs are below some level. And that works pretty well, but it's a little bit clunky. Like, it's a bit of an abuse of the rate limiters. Rate limiters are supposed to be like a backstop against abuse. They're not supposed to be like credit enforcement. And so I actually want to solve this really, really well with Adaptee. And it's one thing that I think like our two companies combined can do really well, where you as an app developer, say you're doing image generations, you want to allow a certain number of image generations per plan, right? So you use Adaptee's paywall, basic plan gets you 100 image generations, pro plan gets you 1,000. And then Adaptee through adaptees like webhooks that you guys provide, goes out to AI Proxy and says, this user has the pro plan, so allow 1,000 image generations to go through per month. And then we do the enforcement. So this is something that like I've been cooking up a bit, actually, and it's something that I want to launch soon, where our two companies combined solve this use case really, really well. People that are building for AI apps, they want to monetize and they don't want the risk of their AI bill exploding beyond what the revenue is coming in, can drop this in and just have peace of mind.
Yeah, so rather than kind of the very blunt instrument of, like you said, using the rate limiter to say, let's enforce what is essentially a monetization strategy using a rate limiter, right? Which is, like you said, it works, but it's clunky and it's not what it's meant for. Instead, you want to actually tie your usage to the revenue coming in so that you basically can enforce through code and through policy where, you know, a user's not going to be allowed to go beyond what would make them profitable to us as a customer, because we're not going to let them, right, through enforcement of the monetization strategy and also then the usage of the feature, right, through AI Proxy. So maybe to generalize, if people aren't going to use those tools, that's the advice, right, is to tie the revenue model, whatever that is, the monetization model that you have for your app, create maybe reasonable usage numbers, and then use those numbers to limit how much access a user has specifically to the AI API, so that you literally cannot go past, you know, what would be ideal, right, for the business.
Yeah, that's right. And the devil's in the details on that one about protecting that your endpoints aren't getting abused. The like tried and true and classical way to do this is to have user accounts and tie quotas to a user account. In theory, if you have good protections that prevent spam accounts from signing up for your service, which, you know, if you use something like Sign In with Apple, that's pretty good. That'll be a decent approach. Then you can like deduct the credits tied to a specific user ID, and that'd be a really tight solution. If you don't have user accounts, it gets more tricky coming up with stable identifiers, but it's something that I think like our two services, we both work hard to get stable identifiers, and I bet our two services combined can pull this off.
Cool. Well, I think we've kind of covered everything about, you know, what's available and what you can work on and how you can monetize it. So I guess maybe the final thought to our listeners is go out there and check out these tools, check out these models and these LLMs and think up ways that you can use them. I just spoke with a customer of Adaptees the other day who's using a variety of AI tools to do like a makeup suggestion thing where you take a picture and then it'll give you like suggestions on how to create that makeup look and even give you information about which products you should go buy from the store. And when I asked him like, how are you doing all this? He kind of gave me the rundown of what it looks like. And it sounds like something that is really a combination of what you've talked about here, which is it's not about necessarily the individual sort of functionality of one maybe model or tool, but it's how can you combine them in a way that solves a real problem for someone that looks like magic. I mean, thinking about, I've not used that app that I just mentioned, but imagining how it would work if I came across something where it's like I take a picture, you know, of someone, and then I take a picture of a celebrity with makeup on, and I'm like, here, put this on this other person, and then tell me how to do it. I would not have imagined even a couple years ago that a computer could do that. That just seems too complex, right? Too many squishy human, too many problems that are only really solvable by humans, right? Like we have this remarkable ability to, you know, to infer and to look at nuance and things like that to get to the heart of the problem and solve it. And computers heretofore have been very bad at things like that. So it's really cool that we are now able to utilize computing to get there. And I think that's the key with this is maybe, at least for me, I'll say this about myself. I feel like I need to expand my horizon as a developer and as somebody who wants to build products beyond what I know is possible, right, with computing and being an engineer for my whole career. I have a very specific, I guess, set of priors around what I assume is possible and what I think is what would work well, right? And I think the thing that is scary and also really exciting about this new world of AIs is that, for one thing, I don't really understand how they work. And that's always a little scary, right? Because you kind of are like, why can't I, this should just be math. Why can't I figure this out? But if you can get past that, what is it that it can do, right? And you should not limit yourself to, well, it can, you know, read and write data, or it can go to some website and pull things, you know, like all the things that sort of computing has been traditionally good at. That's all true. But there's also this whole new like collection of problems that potentially we could solve with these tools. And I think that's maybe the challenge, right, for us as a group, is to be able to think beyond kind of the analytical and into things like, well, what if somebody wanted to recreate a makeup look? Like, is that possible? Yes, apparently. The answer is yes. Like, you can combine these tools together and you can get a reliable answer. Look beyond, right, the traditional.
Yeah. If you've had ideas that you've been nurturing but have deemed too difficult to pull off as an engineer, it's time to look at them again, because a lot more is possible now. And if the current models don't solve it well for you, but they solve it in some way, like, ship it anyway, because the models are going to keep getting better. And then you have these big billion-dollar companies that are doing work for you, right? Like, they're improving the frontier of what's possible. And so if you've shipped this first version and all of a sudden they release, you know, a 50% improvement, all of a sudden your app might work really well. And this thing that you deemed impossible is now totally within the realm of both possibility and monetization. Like, you can make money on it.
Right. You could double or triple your like monthly revenue based on the fact that the company that you don't have any involvement with has spent billions of dollars to improve some model on the back end that you're just using, right? And you're like, sweet, I just tripled my revenue. Thanks. Essentially for free, right? As far as I'm concerned, because I didn't pay for any of that investment. So yeah, very fair.
Really amazing. I mean, they're all in such cutthroat competition too, that the price just, it gets dropped down, you know, pushed down. We as app builders get all this amazing functionality that we can build apps on for cheap.
Right. Not free, but for very little. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Lou, for joining us on the show and sharing your expertise. I know I learned a lot about how this stuff works, and I will say that my mind is already kind of, you know, racing with a variety of ideas and things that I might try and, you know, tinker with and see what I could figure out. So I hope that our audience is in a similar position. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Ben. Yeah, if you need any help with AI Proxy, you want a prototype, message me anytime.
Sure. Sounds good.
Thanks for having me on the show.
See you next. Sure. See y'all next time.